This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney.
I want to do something that's, you know, much, much different than probably a lot of principals. I want, you know, the boards to come down off the houses. I want less crime and people from outside our community coming in and selling drugs. I want to start working on the neighborhood, the streets.
The documentary Oiler follows Craig Hockenberry, the school's principal, when the film was produced through a year at the school, focusing on Hockenberry's mission to transform a community battered by crime and poverty, and on then-senior Raven Gribben's quest to become the first in her family to finish high school and go to college. The documentary, produced in association with American Public Media's Marketplace, has its local premiere this evening at Mount St. Joseph University. And joining us to talk about the film and the school are former Oiler principal Craig Hockenberry, who's now superintendent of Three Rivers Local School District, Oiler graduate Raven Gribben's, who's now studying at Penn State Greater Allegheny, and the producer of the film Oiler, Amy Scott, who's the education correspondent for Marketplace. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good to see everybody this afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thanks.
Amy, tell me about how this documentary about Oiler came to be. What drew you to tell the story of Oiler School?
I first learned about Oiler in 2012 in the spring. I did a story for Marketplace when Oiler had relocated to a temporary space while its original building was renovated. And I met then-principal Hockenberry and was just really taken with the idea of a school that had all of these services in the school building, a health clinic, at the time, free breakfast, lunch, and a snack, I think, in the afternoon. But I learned that when they moved back into their old building, they were going to have a vision center, preschool, and eventually breakfast, lunch, and dinner, what would go on to be a dental clinic. And I found that pretty fascinating and pitched to Marketplace doing a whole series about the school as it reopened its original building with all of these services in place.
Craig, that's pretty amazing. The school had it had health services, social services, academics. That's incredible. I mean, that's not your typical school, is it?
No, it wasn't our typical school at all. It was quite an undertaking. We had a fantastic team in place to really push this across the finish line and to get the things that we needed into our school to make our kids and our families and our community get to that next level. And it was an honor to be a part of it. It was honor to lead. And I've been excited about the film and excited about watching Oiler continue to grow even after I've been gone for quite some time.
Now, Oiler, it's on Hatmaker Street in Lower Price Hill, right?
That's correct.
Okay. What is life like in that neighborhood around the school? What's the whole neighborhood like?
Yeah, the neighborhood's historically been an urban Appalachian community. So it's one of the only inner city schools in the United States that's predominantly white children growing up in the inner city. It's become much, much more diverse over time now, but many of the families are from Appalachian backgrounds, from when the coal mines and the factory jobs went away in West Virginia and Pennsylvania and parts of Kentucky, folks migrated to Cincinnati where they were employed and they stayed in that area. So some of the same names have been there for over 100 years. So it's got quite the history.
Yeah, was it a tough job being the principal of Oiler?
Yeah, it was the hardest work I ever did in my entire life. there wasn't one single day at Oiler School that was easy. Every day was tough, and it was the most important work that anyone could imagine. So you had to be on your toes at all times.
You know, there's one part in the documentary where you're wearing a jacket that says principal on the back, and you're out chastising some students. I think they were delinquent that day, or they were skipping school or something. You were giving them a hard time. Was that kind of a typical day for you, that you had to really, really keep writing folks? And
yeah, we had to stay on top of our game. Like I said, just about every hour on the hour, we had to be alert. We had to make sure that we did everything the right way to make sure kids were safe, because the neighborhood has a lot of parts of it that are dangerous, and we really had to be on top of it all the time.
Now, Raven, what were people telling you about your future when you were in school? What were they saying about your chances of being successful in life?
They said my chances were slim to small because of where I grew up, and nobody else in my family had went to college, so they just kept saying I wasn't going to make it.
So what are you doing today? I mean, you're in college now. How what's life like for you right now?
I'm going into my junior year at Penn State. I'm studying criminal justice. I want to become a juvenile probation officer, then go to law school and become a lawyer.
Wow. How did your experience at Euler help you get to this point?
It made me like physically ready, because it's a small school and our campus is small, and it's like more of a family at Euler. So at the campus is more of a family too. Everybody knows each other. They had me well prepared.
So what got you through school? Was there something in the back of your head, or did you get a lot of support from people? What kept you going?
I had support from friends and family and teachers, but what made me, like, my mindset was I want to make a difference. I want to be different than how my parents were. So that's what I kept thinking, like, every time I went to, like, when I had to study and stuff, like, okay, I had to study or I'm going to end up like my parents and not go to college and not make something. So
you're feeling pretty good about the direction you're headed now?
Yes.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's talk with Pete in Price Hill. Hi, Pete.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
My question is about crime in the neighborhood. Unfortunately, I used to buy drugs in Lower Price Hill, and I want to say in a positive note that I don't do it anymore because things have changed in the neighborhood. So I want to apologize, and I also want to ask the principal how he safely or confidently addressed crime in the neighborhood.
Okay, Pete, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
That's a great question. Obviously, safety was our number one concern, and probably just about every school in the country's number one concern is safety first. We spent an enormous amount of time building relationships with people in the neighborhood that were drug dealers, were involved in crime, and we worked and negotiated with them to kind of keep all of that nonsense away from the school so we could learn and we could grow and we could do positive things. And it was almost like a treaty that we had with the neighborhood. Very rarely did problems from the neighborhood spill into the school. It took a lot of time. It took a lot of effort. It took a lot of energy, but it was certainly worth it. And at the end of the day, when we think about all the bad things that happen in neighborhoods with poverty, we were fortunate enough to keep a lot of that away from the school and keep the kids safe, because we had to remember these are people's most precious possessions, no matter where they grow up. And we really respected and honored that and worked hard to keep them safe.
Craig, how long were you the principal at Euler?
I was the principal for 13 years and the assistant principal for two.
I wanted to just jump in, this is Amy, to say that one of the things that really struck me about Mr. Hockenberry, Craig, I've come to know him, but he was the principal, so I always defer, was that he was really setting... At the beginning of that school year, he set out to really take on what was happening in the streets. And you heard that in the clip that you played at the beginning.
Right.
He wasn't just focusing on the school, as you expect a principal to, but he really wanted to take on the crime and the poverty in the neighborhood. And I found that pretty intriguing. Can a school really do that?
What were some other things, Amy, that really jumped out at you as you were creating this documentary?
The neighborhood, how close-knit it is, given all the problems, I was really... taken by this community investment in the local school. The evolution of the community learning center model. When Euler's the team came to the community and said, we want to bring in all these services, tell us what you want. They said, we want a high school. We don't even have a high school and our kids aren't graduating. So the idea that this community really came together to push for what it needed and has since built this high school with all these services, I found really remarkable.
That's right, because Euler became K through 12 under your tenure, right?
Yes, it did. It started out a K to 6 school, and then we increased it to a K to 8, and then through engagement with the community, we lobbied really hard to make it a pre-K to 12. It was great. And it's that authentic engagement that we think has the biggest impact on, and it's not just Euler, it's anywhere in public education. I'm at Three Rivers right now, and they wanted a middle school. They have right now, they have a K to six school and a 9 through 12, and they wanted a middle school. And through listening to people and authentic engagement, now we have a middle school. So when you listen to people, things get done in education.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And Amy, what were some of the challenges that you faced in producing this documentary?
Well, first and foremost, I live in Baltimore, Maryland. So I had to fly here quite a bit. I was lucky to work with a local film crew, a company called Chili Dog Pictures. And so they were able to go to the school when I couldn't be here. And that's how we captured a lot that I would have missed otherwise. I was also lucky that Marketplace allowed me to simultaneously produce a documentary film while doing the radio series that I did. And we'll actually have an update on that series next week on Marketplace. So I hope your listeners will be able to hear those stories. We'll talk about where Raven is now, as well as how the school is doing today. And so it was just logistically challenging to be focused on a school in a community outside of my own. But I came to sort of think of Cincinnati as a second home.
So it was challenging personally. Professionally, though, you had to feel pretty good about this. I mean, being able to devote an entire year to covering a story is pretty amazing for a reporter, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a daily journalist, and I'm used to having 4 to 5 hours to turn around a story, maybe a couple weeks if I'm lucky. So to be able to follow a school over a year and then really stay with some of the folks, I've continued to do stories about Raven in particular, has been really remarkable.
So the fact that you were there for a year, did that help you and the crew get a better feel for the neighborhood and be able to interact with the people better? And
I think so. I mean, when I did that first story, it was just such a snapshot of what was going on. But over time, I think the staff really welcomed me. I mean, Mr. Hockenberry and his team were incredibly welcoming and supportive. I really had all access, which was incredible. And I think the community was naturally resistant at first to an outsider coming in, but because Craig had signed on, I think they were a little more willing to trust me. And I'm sure Raven can talk about this. It probably took her a while to warm up to me as well. You know, who is this crazy lady with all this camera equipment following
question,
me around?
What did you think when this all started?
When it first happened, I was nervous and scared. I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. But then after I got to know Miss Amy, and then it just came easier.
You know, did you feel that you were working hard to get through school, and did you feel like that being focused on in the documentary, did that put more pressure on you, or did it actually help you push you to succeed maybe?
Yes, it did. It like motivated me to do better because they were following me around. I didn't want them to have to follow me around, then I end up failing. But Miss Amy, she's like family now. She's been here since I first met her, I was 17, and she's been here with me, and I'm 20 now, so she's been here 3 years. Mr. Hockenberry, he's been family. He's been my principal since I was in kindergarten.
Yeah, is that's interesting. Raven brings up this feeling of family. Is that something that you wanted to create around the school to make it more like we are one big family, one big team working to get through this together?
Yeah, I think in order to have success in some of these communities in the inner city, I think you have to build trust and you have to build relationships. And coming and going, there's been so much in Lower Price Hill, so many people coming and going in the kids' lives, in their families, teachers coming and going. And I wanted to commit to staying there to build that type of relationship. And I felt if we could do that, we could definitely push the pace and get some of these kids across the finish line. And we did. And I don't know what it would have looked like if I hadn't stayed, or if we hadn't talked to other people into not leaving and things like that. So you have to commit. You have to be excited about this work and excited about problem solving and fixing things and bringing resources in. And it was a calling to me. I enjoyed it. Like I said, I was honored to be part of it. I always felt like I had the best job in all of Cincinnati Public Schools. And
even as hard as it was?
Even as hard as it was. Every day I went in, I answered the phone, welcome to Euler, the pride of Cincinnati Public. People used to laugh all the time and crack up laughing when I would say it. I had shirts that said it, and nobody's laughing right now. So I like that.
You think parents are the key to a lot of this, and it has to be tougher for kids whose parents aren't involved in their education?
You know, I'm mixed on a lot of parent involvement. You know, and the reason I say that is if you've ever opened any of the math books and science books nowadays, I can't do half the work in there. And I don't know if it really comes down always. I mean, obviously parents doing all the basic stuff, you know, that you need to have done. But Raven had a good support system, but she wasn't without, you know, a lot of issues in her family as well that she had to overcome. I actually think it makes us stronger. And I think that's what makes a lot of the kids down in Lower Price Hill and a lot of the families down there makes them so tough, because they have to overcome a lot. And I've always appreciated that.
And tell me about some of the other transformations the school went through. You became a K-12 institution, and you put in all these programs that were not just academically based, but talk about the transformation.
Yeah, the biggest transformation started with a partnership with Darlene Kamine and the Community Learning Center Institute. They helped us put things inside our school that we needed that would help us get the kids to accelerate their academic achievement. For example, the nation's first ever eye clinic went inside there. We needed someone to help us foster those type of relationships. The first ever dental clinic in Cincinnati inside of a public school. The first ever child care center. So we had kids from zero all the way to till they were 5 years old. So we had kids right now, the average kid's gonna come into Euler. They're gonna be in school 5 years before they hit a kindergarten seat. And that was made possible through great public and private partnerships that we had to foster and work on. You know, we had the largest tutoring program in the nation, over 400 or 500 tutors that came in to dedicate time. And so taking all these different programs, we had a health clinic, you know, we had mental health services, and they were at, it was unprecedented at the time. We had more than 500, 600, 700 visitors that come to see our school over the time. So we knew we were on the cutting edge, and our kids appreciated, our families appreciated, Cincinnati Public did. And you know, we're all excited about where it is now and where it's going in the future. So,
Amy, did you form any opinions about what was going on at Euler and make any decisions as to how effective what they're doing is?
Well, as a journalist who continues to cover public education, I feel that I have to be a little careful about the conclusions that I've made. But of course, I mean, you know, you start to develop opinions. I'm human as well as a journalist. I think it's a really compelling model. I don't think there are any silver bullets in education. The school is still struggling academically. And trying to find ways to capitalize on the foundation that's been laid with all of these services and start to lift scores to the level that the state requires and the graduation rate that the state requires. So, you know, there are tremendous challenges, but I think it's pretty clear that kids are better equipped to learn if they have eaten a good meal, if they have healthy teeth and can see the chalkboard or now the whiteboard, and their basic needs are being met.
Is this community-based approach? Is this something that's catching on across the country? Are you seeing more and more schools doing this, Amy?
Absolutely, and Craig can attest that they had a constant stream of visitors and continue to at Euler of people from other cities who are coming to look at this model. The community schools approach has been around for at least a few decades, but it's in New York they're expanding their efforts, in other cities as well.
Yeah, we hosted the mayor of de Blasio from New York City, just about every top official from New York City, probably 20 to 35 major United States cities flew in. People flew in from all over. We had a national conference here, and Euler was highlighted. It's been in just about every publication that comes out. And it's they just recently passed legislation in the state of Ohio. It passed yesterday, actually, through the House. To make the Community Learning Center model an option is House Bill 74 or 70, I can't remember, but yeah, so it was it was great to be part of that at the grassroots level and watch it come from the bottom up. So it was cool.
You think every school should be modeled this way, Craig? Or
yes, you know, it's a lot of people think that it's just, you know, putting a health clinic or putting it's what the community wants is what makes it a community learning center. Like, what we needed at Euler is not what we need at Three Rivers. So we need something completely different, and we're working on those items right now as we speak. It's all the same model. It's what families, what communities, what kids, what business partners, what they want to see in their public school that they're paying for, and that is going to help them get to the next level in education. So I'm excited to implement pieces of it in Three Rivers, and we did a lot of it when I was in Adams County as well. If you were to go out to Adams County right now, to Manchester, when I was superintendent earlier this year and last year, there's several components of the Community Learning Center model in place out there too. So yes, it does work.
Raven, what do you think? Does it work? I mean, did it have a big impact for you, the fact that you had all the support at school that you could get if you needed it?
Yes, it was, because like when I talked to my parents, my dad, for example, he went to Euler when he was younger, and then he had to leave and go to a different school, and he ended up dropping out and getting in trouble. So if they would have had a high school at Euler before then I feel like more people would have succeeded and it'd be different. But it's a big change and different and help.
Yeah, it's a big undertaking to put a school together this way, isn't it,
though? It is. And I think that's where I clashed a little bit. I've always respected Cincinnati Public and all the work that goes on. But I think what made Euler a little bit different is it called for a different type of leadership. It was very multidimensional. I had to spend, you know, a lot of time fostering and building partnerships, people that were given, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I had to do a lot more outside of what a normal principal did if we wanted to make this model work. We had people given, you know, millions of dollars, you know, thousands, hundreds. And that meant I had to do a lot more. I had to get involved on a lot different level, and I had to change gears quite a bit. Where most principals now, it's pretty one-dimensional. It's all about the instruction and about instructional leadership, and that is important. But at Euler, it required a different type of leadership, and it was pretty amazing to be involved in that style of leadership. So
it's a lot of job for one person.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of people worried about Mr. Hockenberry because he was burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah, it sounds like it is a lot of work, Amy. Are there other schools that are following similar models that you've seen?
Well, I really haven't focused on other schools. I mean, I know there are other community learning centers out there, and in Baltimore, where I live, there are schools that have similar kinds of support with health services and after-school programming. But I haven't seen firsthand these other schools the way I have Euler.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation, and we're going to talk with Cynthia in Oxford. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi. I'm a former public school teacher. I have friends who are foster care parents. We've discussed a lot the really terrible disruption in kids' lives when they have to go into foster care or some kind of temporary care away from their families. And I would like to ask people involved with Euler School whether they ever had an idea of having a school dormitory that could be staffed by school personnel so that when kids have disruptions in their families, they don't have to have disruptions in school on top of everything else.
Okay, Cynthia, thank you. Interesting questions.
That is a good question. And there was a model. There is a model right now. It's called... the SEED model right now. That's probably one of the more popular schools. Actually, it's interesting that you say that because towards the end of my career, I looked at the SEED model because it actually, all the kids from struggling communities throughout the nation could actually go and live there. And it was a really good model. I actually went and visited one in Baltimore, actually, or right outside of Washington, D.C. And it is a good model. It's very expensive. And Cincinnati Public had a partnership with the farmer family to build one here in Cincinnati, but it fell through at the last minute. I think it's a model that works. I think the one thing you got to work or you got to be concerned about, though, is, when is too much too much? And if the school's providing every single thing, where's the independent piece? Where's the, I don't know. I think that was the big catch that, you know, I heard a lot of people talk about with the SEED model. So,
Amy, the film makes its world premiere here in Cincinnati tonight. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So it'll be a screening at Mount St. Joseph University. at 7 p.m. In their theater there. And I'm very excited to bring it here first. I think this is where, and actually that we did have a private screening at the school yesterday because I felt very strongly that I wanted to make it available to the community and the people who made it possible and who do all the work first. But so tonight will be the first ever public showing. I'm very excited about it.
And there's a panel discussion afterwards?
Yeah, there will be a Q&A with Craig Hockenberry, Raven Gribbins, another student who's featured in the film, Crystal Cornegay. The current principal at Euler will be there, Amy Randolph, as well as the resource coordinator, Jamie Lugan, who is a staff member of the Community Learning Center Institute and coordinates all of those partnerships at the school. So it should be very informative, and I hope people will bring questions.
Now, I understand that Bill Reinhardt from WVXC reporter here, he's going to be the moderator, right?
Yes, and okay. We really appreciate that.
Well, he'll enjoy it, and you'll enjoy Bill, too. I know that. So thank you for all being here today. Much appreciated. Former Euler principal Craig Hockenberry, who's now the superintendent of Three Rivers Local School District, Euler graduate Raven Gribbins, who's now studying at Penn State Greater Allegheny, and producer of the film Euler, Amy Scott, who's the education correspondent for Marketplace. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Kevin Rowinski. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Science Friday coming up next on 91.7 WVXU, and enjoy the Memorial Day weekend.